Shabbat Shalom. I would like to look at one of Balaam's prophecies with you, just for fun today. I think it would be a good time for all of us to look at one of the most important, and this is so appropriate for us, what with us being a Messianic congregation and everything. This is one of the most important Messianic prophecies in the Torah. And it comes from the mouth of Balaam, the prophet Balaam. So we'll turn to Numbers chapter 24. And start reading in verse 7, right in the middle of one of Balaam's prophecies over Israel. Remember what Balaam was trying to do. He was trying to curse Israel. But every time he would try to curse Israel, God would remove the curse from him, from his mouth, and put a blessing there instead. And so Balaam wasn't really in control of what he was saying as he was saying these words. Instead, it was the Spirit of the Lord speaking through Balaam. The Spirit of prophecy came upon him. And so he says this, beginning in verse 17 of Numbers 24. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the forehead of Moab and break down all the sons of Seth. Edom shall be dispossessed. Seir also, his enemies shall be dispossessed. Israel is doing valiantly. So as Balaam was looking into the future of Israel, he saw this vision of a king, a scepter. A scepter is a king. A scepter, you know, is something a king holds. He saw a king rising from within Jacob like a shining star, he says. And he says, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. Now the Targums tell us, in their interpretation on these passages, that this is about Messiah. What's a Targum? A Targum is an Aramaic paraphrase of the Bible. So it's just like we are reading from an English Bible, you know, but the original is in Hebrew, but we're reading from English here. In the days of the apostles, everybody spoke Aramaic, so they had an Aramaic translation of the Hebrew, and that was called a Targum. But the Targums were not really literal translations. They were kind of paraphrases. And so there's a lot of interpretation that goes into a Targum. So it's fun to read the Targums and see what how Jews in the days of the apostles and the time around that, the early sages, how they understood a passage. So when the Targums, and I'll read you a little bit from the Targums on this verse, but when the Targums looked at this, they said, this is about Messiah. Balaam is talking about King Messiah. When he says, I see, so the Targum would be saying something like, I see the Messiah, but not now. I behold the Messiah, but not near. So he beheld him like all the prophets in that regard, from a distance. You know, we have prophecies about Messiah through all the prophets, and they're foreseeing the event. They're foreseeing the person of Messiah. They catch these dim glimpses across the centuries. The Apostle Peter talks about this not now, not near effect that the prophets have in their messianic prophecies. In 1 Peter, do you know this passage? This is kind of, this is one of my favorites from 1 Peter. He says this in chapter 1. He says, concerning this salvation, speaking of Messiah, the prophets who prophesied about the grace that was to be yours searched and inquired carefully, inquiring what person or time the Spirit of Christ in them was indicating when he predicted the sufferings of Christ and the subsequent glories. It was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves, not now, not near, but you, in the things that have now been announced to you through those who preach the good news to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven. And then Peter says, things into which angels long to look. These prophecies about Messiah. How these prophecies about Messiah work out. These are things into which angels long to look. So when we study the prophecies of Messiah, we are learning about things the angels wish they were learning. From our own perspective, as we look forward to the second coming of Messiah, we are also making, like Peter says, a careful search and inquiry into the Scriptures to see with the eyes of our mind, to behold the One who is coming, but not now, and not near. But our experience with Messiah is different than Balaam's. Our experience with the Messiah is different than the prophets. Though His coming is not now, He is near. When you are a believer, when you are a follower of Messiah, when you are in Messiah, to use the apostolic language, He is in you. And His Spirit is invested upon you. And then it's true when He says, I am with you always, even until the end of the age. So a person might struggle with different things. A person might struggle with loneliness, with fear, with uncertainty, with guilt, with temptation. How many things might we struggle with? A person might struggle with frustration, with all manner of struggles. But how different would that struggle be? How would it change your mind to know that the King was at your right hand? That the Messiah of Israel was present with you. That all Israel and all the people of God, all the people of the Messiah say together, I have not seen Him, but He is here now. I have not beheld Him, but He is near. Balaam foresaw the coming of the King of Israel. And it says, regarding this coming of the King of Israel, some pretty violent things. It says, a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and it shall crush the forehead of Moab and break down all the sons of Seth. Edom dispossessed. Seir dispossessed. Israel doing valiantly. So Balaam foresees this coming king utterly defeating the enemies of Israel. And this is what I wanted to read to you from the Targums, the paraphrase of this passage, because the Targums look at this and they say, what is this talking about? When is this prophecy? I see it, but not now? Okay, when? I behold it, but not near? Okay, where? When? Where? So Targum Yonatan says, it reads it this way. It says, I shall see Him, but not now. I shall behold Him, but it is not near. When the mighty King of Jacob's house shall reign, and the Messiah, the powerful scepter of Israel, shall be anointed. He will slay the princes of the Moabites and bring to nothing all the children of Seth, the armies of Gog, who will do battle against Israel, and their carcasses shall fall before Him. So Targum Yonatan throws this prophecy forward into the time of the battle of Gog and Magog. If I said to you the battle of Armageddon, as you know, coming from a Christian background, you might resonate with, oh, battle of Armageddon, I've heard of that. I recognize that from some end times stuff, you know, maybe some sort of end times type teaching or movie or something like that that you've seen, battle of Armageddon. The same effect happens in Judaism when you say the battle of Gog and Magog. You say, what the Christian association is with Armageddon in Judaism is the battle of Gog and Magog. So Targum Yonatan says, when are we going to see Him? At the battle of Gog and Magog. And He's going to come and He's going to do some crushing of foreheads and so on. So maybe take heed, President Ahmadinejad. However you say your name. Maybe take heed. Read the Targums. Read the prophecies of Balaam. You can shoot your missiles, but it doesn't go so well for the enemies of Israel. Beware the powerful scepter. Let's read another Targum. This is Targum, it's from Targum Onkelos. Onkelos was a proselyte to Judaism. And he wrote a Targum, a paraphrase of the Bible. A very famous Targum now. And he renders it this way. He says, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. When a king shall rise out of Jacob, and the Messiah will be anointed from Israel, he will slay the princes of Moab and reign over all the children of men. And Edom shall be his inheritance, and Seir a possession of Edom's adversaries. So again, following the same line of interpretation, we're talking about King Messiah. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. And it's not just these Targums. This is a pretty universal interpretation in all of Jewish literature. In all of Jewish literature, this passage is understood as speaking of the coming of Messiah. And so when Balaam goes on to refer to a star coming forth from Jacob, that rising star in Balaam's oracle has almost universally been understood in Judaism as another reference to Messiah. So I'd like to read to you a little short text. This is a very short text from a passage called The Testament of Judah. This is from an apocryphal work called The Testament of the 12 Patriarchs. And you have to imagine that this is the patriarch Judah on his deathbed. He's blessing his sons and giving them some last-minute advice. And so these words, the writer puts these words into the mouth of the patriarch Judah. And he says, this is in regard to this Balaam oracle. You'll hear some of the language. He's making a prophecy. Judah's making a prophecy for his sons. And he says, after this there shall arise for you a star from Jacob. And a man shall arise from my posterity like the son of righteousness, walking with the sons of men in gentleness and righteousness. And in him will be found no sin. And the heavens will be opened upon him to pour out the Spirit as a blessing of the Holy Father. And he will pour out the Spirit of grace upon you. This is the shoot of God Most High. This is the fountain of life of all humanity. He will illumine the scepter of my kingdom, and from your root will arise the shoot, the branch, and through it will arise the rod of righteousness for the nations to judge and to save all that call on the Lord, all that call on the name of the Lord. So this is a beautiful, I like that very much. It's a beautiful prophecy. It seems that almost every line of interpretation in Judaism, though, agrees that this star that rises out of Jacob, coming forth from Jacob, is either King Messiah, or at the very least, King David and the Davidic line, which, of course, ends in King Messiah. That's why, you know, given that background, that's why it's surprising to me to read Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who is Hanasi because he is a descendant of King David. He's a descendant of King David. He's in the Davidic line. He's the redactor of the Mishnah. He lived at the end of the 2nd century, beginning of the 3rd century. It's strange to read his commentary on this passage, the star out of Jacob. I see him, but not now, a star coming forth from Jacob. He says this. He says, do not read the verse as a star shall come forth from Jacob, but read it as if it says, a lie shall come forth from Jacob. It's a little bit of wordplay in the Hebrew. Instead of reading the text literally, a star, the Hebrew word is kokav, for star, he tells his disciples, don't read it as kokav, read it as kozav, which is you know, to change one letter and make it into lie. A lie will come forth from Jacob. This is kind of strange, don't you think? Why would a rabbi tell his disciples to intentionally misread a verse of Scripture? Well, there's a story behind this. And it's an important story for us to know, because it's a part of who we are. It's a part of our story and how we got here. after the ascension of the Master, what we read about in Acts chapter 2, the Jewish believers under the leadership of the apostles and under the leadership of Yaakov, James the Righteous, the brother of the Master, they were remaining centralized, you know, in Jerusalem around the Holy Temple. And they stayed there in Jerusalem. And the apostles and the council of the apostles adjudicated out of Jerusalem until the Jewish revolt against Rome. Some 40 years after the death and resurrection of the Master, the Jewish revolt against Rome, just before the Romans came, one of their number received the prophecy from God telling them to flee from Jerusalem and to relocate to the city of Pella, which was a city across the Jordan River. And this was in keeping with what the Master told his disciples, and he said, you see armies coming against the city and surrounding the city, flee from the city. So they relocated to Pella. The believers relocated to Pella, and they waited out the Jewish war. But after the destruction of Jerusalem and after the end of the war, they returned to the ruins. They returned to the ruins of Jerusalem, and they reestablished themselves among the ruins. Some 60 years later, a Jewish rebel hero named Shimon bar Kosiva rose up to lead a second Jewish revolt against Rome. It's interesting, we never really knew what his last name really was, Kosiva. We didn't know until archaeologists back in the 1940s, perhaps the 50s, early 50s, found in caves down around the Dead Sea some correspondence, wartime correspondence from Bar Kosiva to some of his generals, and there we had it, his real last name. So it's kind of interesting. Up until, we didn't know his real last name because the sages didn't tell us what his real name was. But it's Kosiva, Shimon Bar Kosiva, Simon the son of Kosiva. He was a rebel, he was a hero, he was like Barabbas, he was a zealot, and he rose up to lead another revolt against Rome, a second revolt of the Jewish people in the land of Israel against Rome. And he rallied the Jews of Judea and the Jews of the Galilee to his cause, and even the famous Rabbi Akiva and the sages under Rabbi Akiva joined the revolt. So Rabbi Akiva came to the conclusion when he met this man, when he met Shimon bar Kosiva, that bar Kosiva was the Messiah that God had promised. It says, in the Midrash it says, when Rabbi Akiva beheld bar Kosiva, he exclaimed, "This is the King. This is Messiah." Akiva and the Jewish population that gathered around Kosiva applied the words of Numbers chapter 24, 17, our passage from Balaam's oracles, to their new leader, and they renamed him Bar Kokhba. Kokhba, meaning from the word Kokav, star, so Kokhba, instead of Kosiva, they renamed him Son of the Star. They believed that he was the long-awaited Messiah King who would throw off the yoke of Roman tyranny and reestablish the kingdom of Israel. According to Eusebius has a journal of a Jewish believer named Ariston. He was one of the apostolic community. And his name is Ariston of Pella. One of the members of the Jewish believers who fled to Pella, Ariston of Pella. And Ariston writes this about Kosiva. He says, the leader of the Jews at this time was a man by the name of Bar Kokhba, which signifies a star, who possessed the character of a robber and a murderer, but nevertheless, relying upon his name, boasted to them as if they were slaves, that he possessed wonderful powers, and he pretended that he was a star that had come down to them out of heaven to bring them light in the midst of their misfortunes. So this is Bar Kokhba, son of the star. They say that the sages began to wonder if this was really the Messiah or not, when he forced his men to show their allegiance to him by having all of his men cut off one of their fingers. It's kind of a grisly show of allegiance, but he asked his warriors under him, to each of them, to cut one finger off of one of their hands as a show of loyalty. But initially, you know, the revolt went very well. Barkosiva and his men recaptured Jerusalem from Rome. They pounded the Romans. They pounded the Romans so badly that when Hadrian had to report back to the Senate, he didn't salute them with the with the usual salute of your legions are doing well. It was bad news for the Romans. It was really bad news for the Jewish believers when Bar Kokhba took Jerusalem back. Because Bar Kokhba required the believers to accept his messianic claims. Who's the Messiah now? And by all accounts, and even by accounts of his own correspondence, the archaeologists found this was a very cruel and despotic man. And he did not hesitate to punish and even to slaughter his own people, even to slaughter Jews who did not obey him. And the believers in Jerusalem could not accept this man. They could not follow this man who was claiming to be the Messiah. And so they fell victim to his ruthlessness. Yeshua had warned us. He had said, "See that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Messiah.' They will lead many astray." And we read in the Apocalypse of Peter, which is another apocryphal work, but in the Apocalypse of Peter, which scholars think was written during the Bar Kokhba revolt, or there about that time by Jewish believers, it says, "This deceiver is not the Christ. And when the believers reject him, he shall slay them with the sword, and there shall be many martyrs. Many shall be martyrs at his hand." But the believers were not the only Jews who were reluctant to endorse Kosiva. It says in the Midrash Rabbah, when Rabbi Akiva beheld Bar Kosiva, he said, "Ah, this is the Messiah." But Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta replied, "Akiva, grass will be growing from your cheeks and the Son of David will not yet have come." In other words, you'll be long dead before the Messiah comes. And of course, Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta was correct. Kosiva did turn out to not be the Messiah. The rebellion against Rome ended with a catastrophic disaster for the Jewish people. Rome came back and crushed the rebellion and then unleashed punishing persecutions against Jews throughout the empire, at which time it became illegal to keep the Sabbath and so forth, at which time it became illegal to wear tefillin or to be... that's the short version of the story. There's actually, it's an amazing story. That's the short version of the story. But the failure of this second Jewish revolt, the Bar Kokhba revolt, explains Rabbi Yehuda. And why, when he turned to Numbers 24:17, he said to his disciples a generation later, because this is a generation later, he looks back at what happened with this false Messiah, Bar Kokhba, and all the trouble that had come because of him. Rabbi Akiva and his wrong interpretation of Balaam's prophecy. And so Rabbi Yehuda turns to his disciples and he says, "Don't read it as a star shall come out of Jacob, Bar Kokhba. Read it as a lie. Because Bar Kokhba was not the Messiah. He was a lie." So it's a polemic against Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba was not the Messiah. His claim to be the Messiah was a lie. So ever after, the sages refuse in Jewish literature, and this is why we didn't know his original last name, they refused to refer to him by his real name, Bar Kosiva, and they don't refer to him as Bar Kokhba either. They always refer to him as Bar Kosiva, the son of the lie, the son of a lie. Now, Rabbi Akiva was not the only one to look at Numbers 24:17 and understand that it referred to the Messiah. I showed you how all the Targums and all these different interpretations look at this text and say, "This is the Messiah." I'd like to suggest to you, And this is just my theory, this is just a guess, I don't know, you know, this is like a little speculation. But I'd like to suggest to you that another great Jewish leader also interpreted this passage as referring to the Messiah, and that was the prophet Daniel. So we know that the prophet Daniel was eager to learn about the end times. And we know that he studied the prophecies of Balaam. How do we know that he studied the prophecies of Balaam? He paid careful attention to prophecy in general. So remember that, you know, in Daniel 9, he's talking about studying from the prophecies of Jeremiah and so forth. But the prophecies of Balaam are the only prophecies in Torah that speak in specific terms about the nations involved in the exile. And that is exactly where Daniel found himself. So he was interested in the prophecies of Balaam. And he speaks of, Daniel also mentions ships from Kittim, the nation of Kittim. That's a term that he took from Balaam to speak about Rome. I could show you all this, but it's not important. It's not important right now. My point is, Daniel studied Balaam's prophecies. Is it possible that he studied those prophecies to learn about Messiah as well? Perhaps he could have understood the prophecy of the star coming out of Jacob, the star that rises out of Jacob, as a prophecy of the coming of Messiah. Remember, he's the head of the wise men of Babylon. He studied Chaldean literature, the wisdom of Babylon, including astrology. And when the Persians toppled the Babylonians, Daniel rose up in Darius's court. Remember all this? It's all in the book of Daniel. You know, it's more, yeah, I know he went in the lion's den and all that. Just after that, Daniel became the head wise man of Persia. And so he's renowned as this interpreter of visions and dreams, etc., etc. But suppose that in his studies of Torah, while in exile in Babylon and Persia, Daniel read Balaam's prophecy of a star, and he literally interpreted this, that in the future, the sign of the Messiah, rather than taking it just as a metaphor, what if he literally interpreted this and said the sign of Messiah would be shown in the stars, and a single star would one day herald the advent of the Messiah? Not in Daniel's lifetime. Not in his days. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. One day, though, a star would arise, heralding King Messiah. We know that Daniel was into this stuff. I mean, he prays and fasts to figure out the end times. You know, he goes through this long prayer and fasting thing, and until the angel Gabriel appears to him. Angel Gabriel says to him in Daniel 12:13, he says, "You're not going to see the days of Messiah." He says, "As for you, go your way to the end. You will enter your rest and rise again for your allotted portion in the end of age." In other words, you'll die before the resurrection of Messiah and all that sort of thing. But in Daniel 12:4, the angel tells him, "Shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end." In other words, the stuff I'm telling you, keep it quiet. Which indicates to me that perhaps Daniel might have left some sort of written record that would follow him. Now, we know he left the book of Daniel, for example, but could there have been something more that perhaps he left for the satraps and the astrologers and the wise men of Babylon and Persia that were under him? Could he have left them a testimony, a prophecy, a sign to watch for? Because why was it that those magi from the east, those Gentiles, were watching for a star that would herald the birth of the King of the Jews? As it says, "Now, after Yeshua was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men came from the east to Jerusalem," from the east, "saying, 'Where is he who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.'" Shabbat Shalom.